This is the Real Talk University podcast, where your hosts, Andre and Christian, explore success stories outside of the classroom.
What is up, Real Talk fam? What is up? We're back. This is a new episode of the Real Talk University podcast. Yes, we are back, guys. I know it's been really slow recently with the content and the episodes and the interviews, but rest assured, Christian and I are back. We're doubling down on this podcast and everything that we've talked about since we started this podcast a year and a half ago. And you're going to see that over the course of the next few months. You're going to see a lot of quality content, a lot of content in general, at least compared to what we've been doing these past few months. And we're really going to go all in on this because your guys' feedback and your guys' support has been incredible so far. I mean, since the day we've started, your guys' support has just been incredible. It's been amazing, and it's so motivating to continue to hear insights and feedback from you guys on how this show has been able to help you make leaps in your entrepreneurial journeys or just your student journeys or life journeys in general. So we're really excited about where this podcast can go and the opportunities it can open later on and down the road, especially like we talked about with the blog that we're going to be launching in here in the next few months. But I mean, it all starts with this episode. This is a really unique episode. We had the pleasure of bringing on David Riggs. It was actually a pretty cool story. During the summer, I was working on my agency, and one of the problems I had was scaling. You know, as a 19-year-old college student, I really couldn't figure out what it was going to take for me to actually create a business rather than a job, because I was doing everything. I was managing the clients, I was doing the client work, I was doing the accounting, I was doing paying the bills, paying the subscriptions, and it really wasn't a business. And I was really aware of that. And I just remember seeing David on LinkedIn talking about how he went through the same things as a college student, and I really related to it. So I reached out to him, and I was just shocked and really grateful on how helpful he was to me. All he wanted to do was help. He didn't ask for anything in return. And after a few conversations, just got a really good sense of energy from him and what he was doing. Figured we'd bring him on the show. And this is a unique episode, guys, because this is the first time Christian and I had an opportunity to interview another current college student that is doing big things outside the classroom. He truly is doing big things. I mean, he has his own agency that has done extremely well. He has an internship or a job lined up after college already that pays really well. And he's done an amazing job organizing TEDx events for his college. I think it's Wabash College in Indiana, to be exact. I might have butchered that name. But yeah, I mean, throughout this episode, it's going to be a really cool vibe that you guys get from it, just because Christian and I could so well relate to David and his story and his journey, just because the situations are so familiar. So I think you guys are really going to enjoy this. David just gives off a great vibe. He gives a lot of crucial information. Especially, I mean, if you're a college student tuning into this right now, like, treat it as a lecture, treat it as a class, like, take notes. Like, there's a lot of value that David puts out in this episode. So I really advise you guys to get serious with this and really listen and active listen and ask questions and all that kind of stuff, because it's really going to be helpful, really well time spent. So before we get into it, a few of the highlights from this episode. So here, I guess, are the main takeaways. The first takeaway was that David emphasizes to do three actionable things every day. So measure your daily progress by having three things that you can do daily that will build confidence and help you pick up steam in life and business. And he'll talk about examples of how he does that in his own life throughout the episode. The second one was grades don't matter. So just like you saw in the cover or the title of this podcast episode, grades do not matter. He'll get into why he thinks that in the episode as well, so stay tuned. And then the third one is opportunities don't fall in your lap as a student. And this is something that we've preached since day one, is like, people expect just because that they go to college that they're going to have a job and their security and all that kind of stuff, but it's just not like that. And that's a good thing, because you should go out and compete for the job that you deserve. And Dave is going to talk about in this episode how you can go and get what you deserve. So lots of great things to look for in this episode, guys. Again, we're really going to go hard these next few months with the podcast. We know we've been slacking recently, but we're back. We're dedicated. And it's all going to start with this episode, I think, for you guys that are interested in hearing more from us and what we're all about. So definitely listen through to this episode. There's a lot of gems. And let us know your thoughts. What did you like most about the episode? What was your biggest takeaway? If it wasn't one of the three that I mentioned, we'd love to hear about it. And definitely reach out to David and use him as a resource, because he has a lot to offer. And you're going to hear why I say that, or you're going to learn exactly why I said that in the, you know, the course of the next 40 minutes. So thank you guys so much. And without further ado, here's David Riggs. Perfect. Okay, we'll get started. What's up, guys? Welcome back to Real Talk University. Today we have David Riggs on the podcast for an interview. Long overdue. Really excited to have David here with us. So if you could just tell everyone, especially Christian and I, a little bit more about who you are and what you do.
Yeah, so my name is David Riggs. I'm actually a senior at Wabash College. It's a small liberal arts college in Crawfordsville, Indiana. Outside of college, I run my own digital marketing agency that really focuses on building websites for small businesses and also some real estate agents. And then I also run a TEDx event in whatever free time I have.
Wow, man. Yeah, you do it all. And that's, it's cool, because one of the things with our podcast, we want to bring on more guests who are younger, like you, especially that are in college, because that's our audience. We're talking to college students through our podcast, and obviously they could relate to you better than they could to a 50-year-old billionaire CEO. Yeah.
Definitely.
Sweet. So how did you get started with, you know, digital marketing in your agency? I guess we'll start there.
Yeah. So funny enough, my dad has been in public policy for some time, and he came up to me one day and was like, "Hey, do you know what a Facebook page is?" And at the time, this was like 3.5 years ago, I really had zero idea. I had downloaded Instagram and Twitter on my phone. I don't even think I had Facebook, honestly. So I was like, "Sure, Dad, I'll figure it out for you. I have nothing else better to do." Basically built up the Facebook page, and I kind of was giving him tips on like, "Hey, this post is horrible, but this one's good. You should do more like that." And slowly but surely, we actually built the page up to like 1,000 likes in a little bit under a month. Which I mean was kind of shocking for me. I really didn't know what I was doing, and I don't think he did either. But that actually kind of got me hooked on, hey, this social media thing is actually kind of powerful. And that was even just 2.5 years ago, and I think we're seeing that play out since then. But slowly but surely, I just kept working with him. And then what I didn't know is he was kind of plugging my name in with different companies behind my back, but in a good way. So I actually landed another client for social media management about 3 or 4 months after I started helping my dad. And then after that, it was really, we were just slowly adding a couple, basically every 4 or 5 months on social media management. Really enjoyed doing that. But as time went on, and I don't know if either of you have really done social media management, but if any of your audience has, you'll realize that it is super time consuming. Even if you're not the one creating the content, it's hard just to manage it, manage the analytics, make sure you're communicating with clients, the wants and needs, and all the different stuff. So I actually took a step back and thought about the agency in a different light, and actually built our first website for a friend of mine named Will Yank. I kind of was sitting there. I was actually studying for finals, and I was like, I need to do something else. So I texted him. I was like, hey, do you have a website? He was like, no. So I was like, okay, cool. We're going to build your website. Give me like a week. So I figured out this site. I basically logged on to Wix, just chose something and went with it. But I actually love the fact that websites, you could be a little bit more creative with it. But looking at other websites online, I always had problems with the way they did stuff, whether it was the copy or you had like 18 different pop-up boxes and that wasn't normal. So slowly but surely, I started building his site. He loved it. And I was like, I think I'm going to do this a little bit more. And then I want to say that was honestly about a year, year and a half ago. And since then, we've cleared about 20 sites. We just actually finished a pretty cool co-working site for the city of Crawfordsville as well. So we're actually doing pretty well now. We're kind of niched down into small business websites. Our perfect client is the type of person who actually basically has no website. And if they do, it's useless. So we really help clients who don't do anything with online or digital marketing actually get a real footprint going. So we prefer kind of the self-starters, the ones who at the end of the day don't have a lot of time for that. But yeah, I mean, honestly, I started with my dad, and slowly but surely, I just kind of followed both my passions, but also kind of listened to what people were saying in the market. And then right now we got a team of about 5 or 6 that we try and clear about 2 websites per month right now. So looking good.
That's sweet, man. Christian here. We haven't spoken yet because Andre's been like, no, nah, kidding. But so where did you learn the skills to kind of build a website and manage the social media? Was it all self-taught? Did you use YouTube? Did you buy a course or anything like that, attend a seminar? Like, what did you do to really get a hone on your skills?
Yeah, I didn't buy any courses. Honestly, I think my attitude toward courses at the time was a little negative, that I wasn't going to pay X amount of dollars to buy this course. But honestly, looking back on it, I think I wish I would have kind of gotten out of my own way. There are a lot of good courses out there. You just have to be smart. But I definitely didn't buy a course. I honestly stuck with YouTube. I thought there were a bunch of awesome pieces of content, honestly. But excuse me, at the same time, I had been on social media for some time, and I also followed a bunch of your influencers, so to speak. So a lot of it was, instead of just consuming their content, it was actually kind of like understanding their content. So if Gary Vee posted 15 videos in a row, it wasn't like, oh, those were 15 really cool videos. But why did he post the videos? What did the copy look like? What was so special about the video that made one of them click versus the other one? So honestly, it was a lot of just learning through example and through experimentation would be the main thing. A lot of it was YouTube. And I would also say a lot of it was networking. So around the same time that I started doing social media management, I also got really active on LinkedIn. And I was following, really, my LinkedIn feed I tried to curate to be the most educational thing possible. So obviously I was going to school, taking classes. None of those really helped me with social media. But hopefully, like after school, if I'd hop on LinkedIn, I was kind of treating it as like, hey, for the next hour, I just need to learn as much as possible, take notes, and use that as a way to go forward. So honestly, it was kind of a mix of self-taught, a lot of experimentation. I was lucky to start off, the first few clients knew me pretty well. So they were pretty open to let me try new things. They weren't having any social media before that. So they were pretty free to like, hey, something's better than nothing. So I actually got pretty lucky in that regard.
Yeah, that's really cool. And I definitely agree with what you said about like consuming rather than like understanding and analyzing, because like I feel like the best way to learn is just to pay attention to how others are doing it and like kind of just question why it's working and why, you know, why they're posting. So that's definitely a good strategy for people in the audience to take from. My next question is just relating to something Christian and I talk about a lot, and I'm sure other college students wonder a lot about, is like how would you compare your mindset in the beginning of college, like for your future, to what it is now? Like, I guess, what was your plan when you first got to college for what you wanted to do after you graduated? And what is it now, since you're basically, you know, one semester away from graduation?
Yeah, no, that's a really good question. So I'm a financial economics major and a rhetoric, which is basically public speaking minor. But whenever I got to Wabash College as a freshman, I was pretty stuck on kind of doing the whole XYZ thing. So I would study all the finance classes, get a really cool internship, turn that internship into a job, and then work there for the next 40 years. I was pretty stuck on that until about sophomore year. I had an internship, realized I was a lot more entrepreneurial than I realized, only because every meeting that I had that summer, I wanted to pitch some new ideas or do something different. And I was always felt a little like I was being suffocated at work, just because I couldn't think outside of the box as much as I wanted to. So I think that slowly changed. Sophomore year was a difficult year, but it was a really good year because it taught me a lot about myself. It also reminded me that like, hey, classes are really important. GPA is important if you value it. But at the end of the day, as long as you're finding a way to get better at least by 1% every single day, you're in a good spot. So I kind of, sophomore year was the first time I really took a step back and was like, all right, classes are cool, but how can I better myself each and every day? So that really started to change my mindset from, I'm going to school and because of these classes, something magical is going to land in my lap at the end of the 4 years and I'm going to end up with this awesome six-figure job. But I kind of flipped it on its head and I was like, hey, in order to get even a job, I don't think classes are the exact perfect route for that. I need to do something else. I need to really start improving upon myself. So I think slowly but surely, I'm kind of reaching this point at the end of my college career that classes are really cool, but I think in college, the only way you get the most out of your college experience is actually doing stuff outside the classroom. So you're, like I was talking about, I've had plenty of econ classes. I've had your macro, your micro, corporate finance, money and banking, all the fun stuff. But at the same time, I think what's actually helped me land jobs and get in rooms and at least get interviews is the fact that I have something to show outside the classroom, where I maybe linked parts of my education together and actually applied them into the real world. Or honestly, I just kind of went off on my own and started a marketing agency, and we don't have a single marketing class at college. So I think at the beginning I was very set on this XYZ path, this thing that my parents had done and my parents' parents have done. And then it slowly turned into, hey, there's no reason to plan that out because I don't think any of us are ever going to be that accurate with it anyway. And it's better to just slowly and surely try and follow your passions, get better at them every day and see where it takes you.
Love that information. I feel the same exact way. I mean, he has had a past with entrepreneurship. His whole family's all in on it, but I've never really experienced it. Both of my parents do work for themselves, but like I didn't know who Gary Vee was until I got to college. So it was very eye-opening to see the kind, like, after we've done some interviews over time, there's like a whole community of people on Instagram and social media that are really fun to follow. And it's like, I just feel like if people, all these people are doing it in the world, like, why can't I? So that's kind of like the mindset I've had lately. So I'm definitely ready to kind of pivot away from, you know, like you said, just trying to get that good job right out of college and working there until you're old and retiring at 65, to just kind of trying to get ahead of that, work for myself, work with AJ, Andre, and just crush it. So definitely great advice. Yeah, but definitely. Yeah, I'm just kind of wondering, since you found success, has it been hard to focus on the classroom? Because I know for me, like, I don't really want to pay attention to class when I could be applying my efforts to other other things that could actually get me some money and somewhere else, like somewhere else down the line of my journey, rather than just taking a class.
Yeah, entirely. It's and I wouldn't even say it was the money that slowly pulled my interest away, but I also kind of have this theory, and it truly is a theory. I'm sure there's numbers and studies on it, but I feel like college teaches you a lot of the low wage skills, or kind of like your minimum wage skills. So it teaches you how to be an employee. It teaches you how to follow directions, meet project deadlines. But it really doesn't teach you any of the high wage skills, like managing people or scaling a business, or really anything that really scales your time or your mind or your basically anything that you know, scaling yourself. So I really struggled that, yes, I was making money outside the classroom, but I really struggled with the fact that like anything that I was learning in the classroom just felt boring, a little out of date, but also in a vacuum. So I'm an econ major. Everything you study is kind of in this vacuum, but when you put it in the real world, the vacuum falls apart and everything you learned doesn't really happen like that. So whenever we looked at like stock market, for example, we looked at it like day by day. In the real world, no one looks at it day by day and incremental changes. They look whatever time period they want to look in and how they want to compare and look at percentages and all that stuff. So I think the biggest thing was actually trying to find the value in education. But at the same time, I definitely have been guilty of moving to the back of the class, sitting on my laptop, acting like I was taking notes. Maybe I had the textbook out, but I was totally shooting emails, shooting cold emails, casually trying to call people in the back of a class. So I've definitely been there. I've gotten in trouble quite a few times. But the nice thing is, I think I've built up enough brand on campus that people understand that, like, hey, it's that kid that starts a business and he thinks he's going to be Gary Vee or whatever, but give him a little break because he's at least having fun and at least he's showing up to class. So I've had some good professors, some professors that have definitely helped me, but a few of them have not been happy when I told them I was missing class for a meeting or something. It's definitely happened.
Yeah, no, we could definitely relate. What do you want to
say? I don't get that. If you tell a business professor, like, yeah, I'm going to a meeting for a real world business like event, why would they not understand? Like, they're just teaching you theories and practices, but you're actually going to do something with your knowledge. You're like, oh, I don't want you to do that. Like, it doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, I've never, so I don't have any business classes. I've never taken one at college. Honestly, I've just read a couple books and stuck with it. But one of the ones this year is I was actually kind of weighing my option of maybe sticking with my agency full-time next year or going after a job for a couple of years just to get a little bit more savings, a little bit more foothold to see where I want to go from there. And I actually missed a class to go interview for a job that was in Florida. And I figured professors would be cool with it because, hey, here's this senior. It's done really well. It's fall of his senior year. He needs to land a job. Like, he can miss a class or two. And I got tore apart by my professors. They were giving me zeros because I missed homework, real weird emails and like, hey, you're missing my class. That isn't the correct way to go about it. So I've definitely had some weird interactions, but I'm kind of with you. At the end of the day, you almost got to think that whether it's a business class or really anything, if you got a student missing class to go do something like an interview or a networking meeting, you should be patting them on the back because they're actually applying what you taught them.
Yeah, so true. And it sounds like you go to a smaller college than where we go to. Like, we have like our lectures are over 100 students each, so we could like get away with just chilling in the back on our laptops, sending out different like LinkedIn campaigns and hopping on a cold call while walking around the lecture hall. So we could definitely relate to that.
Yeah, I think I've only had one class. My biggest class was 65. My smallest class was 4. I think my average class is like 10 people.
Wow, that's crazy, man.
It's hard to hide.
Yeah, definitely. So I just want to go back to something you said earlier, is like how instead of focusing all in on class, you were trying to improve yourself every day. So what were some things that you did, whether it be reading, watching videos on YouTube, or just doing work for your agency that helped you to grow as a person? And what would you recommend for college students, I guess, to grow themselves on a daily basis outside of their classwork?
Yeah, so something that I've spent the last 2.5 years trying to figure out about myself, and I think hopefully it'll apply to some other people, is every day I have a set list of things that I want to accomplish. So one of them is like, I want to get on LinkedIn and engage with 30 people and make a LinkedIn post. I want to read one chapter of a book. I want to work out for an hour. So I basically started out with these like 3 or 4 things that I had to get done every day. And that really helped me improve upon myself, whether it was physically, spiritually, mentally, however you want to go about it. So I think the first thing that I would recommend is I would be like super honest with yourself. If you're a freshman in college, what actually is going to help you improve upon yourself and what actually just makes you feel good? Because reading a book can be awesome. Like it could be a great use of time if you're actually applying what you're reading. I think so many people are like, hey, I've read 40 books on my Kindle this year. Look how cool I am. But they haven't applied anything. They haven't done anything. So I definitely had a few hard talk conversations with myself about like, hey, I got an hour in my day. What is the best ROI positive use of time to go forward? So I think it changes for everybody else. Like I said, mine was, I need to work out every day. I need to most likely at least read a book to stay creative. And I need to be active on LinkedIn. And then one that I've kind of added recently is I need to make basically 10 to 15 sales calls every day. So I have a couple of guys that will prospect, they'll feed me a list, and then I'll try and close them throughout the day. And if I can do those 4 things every day, I know that I've moved my agency forward, but I've also improved upon myself as well. But to be honest, you'll find that as in college, that stuff really only adds up to about 5 or 6 hours, and you've got plenty of time extra. So I always recommend that you kind of have this hustle mentality that you need to be pulling like 18, 20 hour days. I kind of go against that. I'm one that like, I will try and get 10 hours of sleep every chance I can get. If I'm burnt out and tired, I have no problem going back and watching like 2 hours of Netflix, because I know it'll only help me prepare better for the next day, but actually get results that I want to get. Because at some point or another, if you drive a car at 100 miles an hour, you're eventually going to run out of gas. So everybody needs to stop and fill up with gas, get snacks, and get back on the road and do things. I think too many people nowadays are like, I need to pull 18-hour days for the next 10 years to be successful. There's a book sitting at home actually in my dorm that I want to read. It's by the founders of Basecamp. And they talk about how they were like, they just want to do 40-hour weeks. They don't want to be super stressed. And like, here's how we built this company without being caught up in the hustle. So I think that's the advice I would give.
Yeah, we interviewed DHH like a few months back. We actually
were just
gonna drop that name, and then you said the Basecamp book. What's the,
the book
called? Rework. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, his mindset's amazing. He's like, yeah, I worked remotely from a country across the Atlantic Ocean with a guy, and I worked about 10 hours a week on something, and we still made it this crazy big thing. I'm like, exactly.
Yeah, and I'm definitely one that I don't care how long you work. I think there are uber successful people that have probably worked 3 hours a day and probably make close to $1 million a year because they're just super honest with themselves and they don't need to read 4 chapters of a book or they don't need to meditate for 30 minutes in the morning. They figure out what works for them and they just double down on it. So I think if you're a college student, definitely show up to classes, do well, don't try and be perfect, but at the same time, definitely find the 3 or 4 things that you can double down on that actually improve upon yourself that just don't make you feel better.
Exactly right. You definitely should check out that interview we did with David. It was
really
cool.
I will definitely.
Yeah. So I want to move into the event aspect of what you said, because we find it like really cool for like the networking aspect of things, because there's like a lot of our past guests, like we said, are connected with each other and we end up seeing them all come together at these events, which we really want to start attending because it's just like a huge possibility to just network with new people, maybe get some leads, get some clients on business. So how have you been able to kind of set those up?
Yeah, so we have an annual TEDx event that happens kind of mid-March of every year. It's a really cool thing. So if you're unfamiliar with it, TED is kind of like your macro TED Talks. They have two conferences a year, but what TEDx is it's kind of an independently organized miniature TED event. So we organize one of those on our college campus, and it's a great way to figure out how to actually manage people. We have about a team of 40 that myself and really three other guys control and manage and make sure projects get done. And the way I explain it is, one, name me another time that as a 22-year-old, I'm going to be able to manage that many people and actually have something to show for it, if it's not 15 years after graduation. But then the second thing is it gives students a lot of chances to really network with certain speakers, but also bring certain speakers to campus that they maybe want to connect with, work for one day, or get an internship for. So every year we bring about 10 to 12 people to campus to give basically a TEDx talk. And I am 100% guilty of choosing certain speakers that I want to meet, just like I think everybody who's been on that side of the team would be guilty of for like the past 3 or 4 years, just because it's hard not to find people that you find interesting. But at the same time, you're putting in all this work. You might as well get some reward to meet someone that you look up to or someone that's in the field of work that you want to be in. So from kind of a back-end organizer side, we really use those events to bring together a certain community, give students a really cool chance to be exposed to new ideas, but also people on our team to actually, like, you get the network and help a New York Times bestselling author or Fortune 100 CEO write a TEDx talk, which is something that you really only get to do once in a lifetime if you're lucky.
Yeah, that's super cool. And I guess my question would be, like, how has your experience with that translated to your agency, like with hiring and managing people in that sense?
Yeah, I think probably two big ways. One of them is being a TEDx organizer, you kind of have to manage all of the talks at the same time. So if you have 12 speakers or 10 speakers, to keep it simple, you have to manage all 10 of those talks. And as much as you'd like them to all meet the deadlines at the same time, they never do. And it just happens. Some people are months ahead, some people are months behind. So it definitely causes a little bit of a problem, but it challenges you just to be good with client management. I think doing that for a while has also translated over to the agency, because when we work with clients for web design projects or web development projects, I mean, there are some clients that get us stuff the day that we sign the invoice, and there's other clients that are 3 weeks late and they sign the invoice, but they still expect it to be done in 30 days. So there's a lot of moving parts that you have to manage. And I think the one thing that I've learned from TEDx is just the fact you got to stay on top of your stuff. You got to keep the communication lines open. But you also just have to put in the little nitty gritty work that most people won't do, like an hour of emails in the morning just to make sure things are moving. But the other thing is, I think I've realized how important communication is. There's an old saying that, like, how whatever you say, 70% of it is tonality. So whatever comes across is based on how you say it, not what you actually say. And I think that's super important, that whenever we're talking to these TEDx speakers who are Fortune 500 CEOs, New York Times bestselling authors, or your Instagram influencers, they 9 times out of 10 think they're correct on almost every single point that they bring up. So we have to do a really good job of kind of pitching them, hey, it may be better if we structure it this way, but how do you got to bring evidence to the table. You have to bring some real exposure. Why does this actually work? And why isn't it just me telling you to do this? So I think it's taught me a lot about how to communicate with people and kind of manage your manager, if you guys are familiar with that. Really manage upwards and make sure things are happening from a place that you may not be the very top guy. So both with working with clients, but also TEDx speakers, it's taught me a lot about communication, I think.
That's sweet. I was just going to ask you a question on the kind of something similar to that. Obviously, when you're selling, doing cold calls, trying to pitch people for a website, you have to do a lot of good communication, persuasion, all that fun stuff. So has that TEDx really given you the experience you think you needed to start making like cold outreach calls and landing people, or have you just always had that skill?
I think it comes down, I've had a little bit of the skill. I kind of, God's gift to me, I guess. I got lucky. My dad was in public policy, so politician, but not really. He was in front of people all the time. He was always speaking. And I think a lot of that rubbed off on me. So it really helps. But I think TEDx, while the pitch isn't exactly the same for a TEDx talk versus finding a new web design client, it's definitely given me the confidence, because TEDx is honestly one of the easiest and most And it's really just the easiest, one of the coolest things I've ever had the chance to sell to other people. It's a student-led event. We bring people from all across the campus and basically bring these awesome set of diverse ideas so people can engage with them. And it's really easy to sell. So doing that enough times, you get enough confidence that some days or another, I'm like, hey, I just had an awesome TEDx call. I'm going to keep that confidence going. And I'm going to go try and call 15 people for a web design project, which is always going to be a little bit tougher to pitch. So while I think it's not the exact same sales script or exact same sales call, it's definitely given me some confidence to move forward and actually apply those tactics and that confidence and just really talking to people on a much bigger stage.
Sweet, sweet. So what's next in terms of the agency and when you graduate, and I guess what happens when you're done with school and the TEDx events? I imagine you'd probably be done with that and kind of go all in on the agency.
Yeah, so somewhat. So right now the agency, we had a really good kind of like quarter three, quarter four of 2019. So we started to figure a lot of stuff out. So we took a little slow start to January. I guess we're ending January here now, but our goal is to basically, by quarter three, the beginning of quarter three and end of quarter four, we want to basically be on pace to have a six-figure year. So we were pretty close towards the end of quarter three, quarter four, but I definitely want that to be a main goal, that by the end of this year, we need to be on pace for that. So that's the first thing. And then I will actually graduate about mid-May. So then I'll get a month off from school. And then about mid-June, I will actually start at a company called Xylo. And I will be kind of in their client success and then eventually somewhat of like an external consultant. So they're a software company. So what I'll actually be doing is using the data that we get from the software and actually going out to their clients that are basically using our own software and articulating some of the data and helping them really improve their business based on this piece of software that we own. So that'll be kind of what I'm doing for the next 2 years in terms of a job. I will entirely have that agency on the side. Something that's kind of led me to do that is a quote by Mark Cuban. I don't know how direct this quote's going to be, but basically the moral of the story is that Mark Cuban's always had to basically tried to have multiple streams of income, but he's always tried to live off of his lowest stream of income. So if I'm making $1,000 a month and $3,000 a month, I'm going to try and keep all my bills under $1,000 a month. And the bigger income stream is just going to go straight into savings for investments, for real estate, different things like that. So I'm hoping that by about mid-June, the agency will be at a point to where it's pretty automated. I can put in about 10 to 12 hours a week and still get a lot of output out of it. And hopefully that income coming from the agency will cover my basic room and board grocery type expenses. And then anything I earn from the job will just go basically straight into a savings account. And I'll maybe start looking at doing some real estate investing, some multifamily investing, or even just kind of hopefully use my economics knowledge and maybe put some into the stock market as well.
Really cool. Yeah, I think that's a great plan. And I love that quote that you mentioned from Cuban, because having multiple streams of income is definitely key. I guess the last question I have before I pass back to Christian to see if he has any more questions is, how do you manage your time? Because obviously you have a lot of different things to juggle. And I think that's like the biggest question Christian and I get, is just like, how do you do so much in school without, you know, feeling the need to drop out and or even failing your classes, that is?
Yeah. I think the main thing I use is obviously like an Outlook calendar. That's just what my school email is under. So I've basically merged all my calendars onto there. I'm very, very intricate on making sure everything that I need to do that day is on my calendar, so I don't overschedule myself or double book myself. I use Zapier as well. So certain things will automate and I'll get certain reminders to make sure I'm staying on top of everything. I think that's the main thing. You just have to be really honest with yourself and really upfront about scheduling yourself and staying on top of it. But the other thing is I use an app called Todoist. It sounds like to-do list, but just basically drop the L. I use that basically for my day-to-day tasks. I use it like if someone's like, hey, you need to send that email to so-and-so, I will pull out my phone right then and there and put it down. It's probably not the nicest thing to do when you're in mid-conversation, but it's one of the things that I just have to do that or else I entirely forget about it. But then the other thing that I'm starting to do, I started doing it about 3 or 4 months ago that I think is really paying off, is I will actually just batch my work days. So I think right now, Mondays serve as my meeting days normally. So if I have any podcast interviews, if I have any meetings with friends or meetings for TEDx or meetings for my agency, everything goes on Monday. I start at the beginning of the week when I still have a lot of energy, try and knock all those out. And the way my semester is set up right now is that every Tuesday, Thursday, those are the only days I have classes. So Tuesday, Thursdays, for the most part, are just I go to classes, I knock out any emails that come through, and then I really do any side kind of admin agency work that needs to be done. Wednesday, I will do a lot of agency work. That's really my big day in terms of cold calling, any project work, basically giving people feedback. Any big project will happen that day. And then Friday will be a main day for TEDx. I think a lot of people try and do parts of that throughout every single day. So like 9 to 10, they'll do one thing, 10 to 11, they'll do another. I find it's a lot easier for me and just the way I think to put one task down and only devote all my attention to that one task or that one area of life for that day. And then obviously I can come back to it throughout the week, but that's my one day, my one anchor point to get a lot of stuff done. Works for some people, doesn't work for others. It's a tip that I learned from Adam Grant. But it's something that I think is a really easy way to structure my time and keep me moving forward.
That's definitely the same for us. We have class Monday, Wednesday, Friday all semester this semester. And then Tuesday, Thursday, we kind of do a lot of interviews, agency work, and things like that. Obviously, we're doing an interview on a Friday night. Yeah. Which shows that we're about it. We're dedicated to it. So glad you can make it today. We're going to move into the lightning round. It's kind of a few quick questions we do before we wrap it up here. So first, we always ask, do you have any questions for us before we move forward or what?
Yeah. So what is your favorite class that you've had in school? And then what's your least favorite class? I'd be curious.
Oh. Least favorite was definitely freshman writing because I had a TA that was like extremely rude and just wasn't very accommodating. And it was like a really long paper on research. I don't like researching. I don't think it's applicable to my life. Not to be mean to anyone into academia. I just find it like very narrow-minded and not really necessary for success in the real world. So that was my least favorite. And then my favorite, I don't know. That's interesting. Honestly, maybe based on the professor, maybe we had like an 8:30 with him about operations management. It was this professor who was like an actual, he owned his own like business and he would consult for major, major companies on how to run the supply chain in their warehouse. So it was really cool to listen to someone who actually knew what they were talking about versus someone who has a degree in marketing and thinks that they can go teach you marketing when they haven't actually like.
Yeah, they're so focused on academia that they've never actually done anything in the real world.
Yeah, I guess for me, my least favorite is definitely writing in freshman year. There's just, I feel like that's everyone's least favorite. So that was an easy one. And then my favorite would be business law, just because I had a pretty cool professor who's just like made it like stress-free because it was like a fail-safe environment. It's like the tests don't have too much weight and like you can always make it up through doing like a real applicable like work that helped you to learn law better than the test would. So that was pretty cool.
That's cool. I like that.
Sweet. So the first real question, I guess, of the lightning round is if you could have dinner with three people, alive or dead, who would they be and why?
All right. Number one would be Adam Grant. If you don't know who he is, he's an industrial psychologist. You need to go engage with his content or at least listen to his podcasts. Awesome stuff. I just love how intricate he is with everything, but also how detailed and applicable. That'd be number one. Number two would probably be Dave Gerhardt. He was a VP of marketing at Drift, if you've heard of it. But he's the CMO at, I think, Privy. I'm not entirely sure now. I know he just changed, but I've only had a chance to really engage with him a couple of times on Twitter. But his advice on marketing, both on Twitter and LinkedIn, has always been really helpful. It's honestly been better than a lot of articles I've read, and he jam-packs it basically into a tweet. So I would definitely be one guy I'd want to meet. Honestly, the third one is challenging. I'd honestly have to go probably with Elon Musk. And obviously that's a bit of a hyped one. But I think the way that he does marketing today with the Cybertruck, especially, I study that a lot just on my free time, I think is really interesting because then there's a question to be asked that like, did the windows break on accident or did he actually do it to get a lot of attention? What was up with like this new weird design that no one's ever seen before? Like it was a huge risk-taking project. So I think those would be my three for sure.
Very good answers, of course. You actually responded a lot quicker than most people. But this, the last one might stumble you up, but there's one before that. It's if you were in college, obviously you are still in college, but say you're a freshman, you're just getting onto campus, you're trying to find something to do with your free time, what side hustle would you start to kind of generate some side money while you're going to class and stuff like that?
Yeah, I think if I were to do it all over again, I would steer very far away from having a client services business in college because it just multiplies the stress that you have. I think if I were to restart it, I would do something kind of a personal blog or like personal podcast related. I think what you guys do is awesome because podcasting is the easiest way to boost both brands at the same exact time. But then the other thing is I think blogs, especially in just long-tailed content online, is so underrated today. There's a podcast on How I Made My First Million. This guy basically started writing about soap and just different types of soap, and that's how he made his first million. He just sold the blog, and it was a weird way to do it, but it kind of sparked my interest that, like, hey, it doesn't have to be flashy. He knew nothing about soap and was like, I'm just going to start writing about soap, and he did it. Started getting, like, all this free soap sent to him, getting a ton of hits on his website, and then he just basically sold it off and made his first million. So weird story, but I would definitely do something that was more personal content related, something that while I'm building this online business or online content depository that I was also finding a way to improve myself as well. So a lot of podcasters, like, you guys talk to people all the time. You get so much value in that on top of the fact that you're building a podcast, getting your name out there. So I think anything kind of like an online content form, I definitely pick up.
Yeah, it's kind of cool that you mentioned that because, like, we're doing the podcast, but our biggest, I guess, and our only goal for the podcast this year is to create like a blog, like a Real Talk University blog, where, like, basically every campus can have like a chief editor. So, like, your campus would have like a chief editor of Real Talk University, and you could go on there and like filter by college and basically allow college students to like share their opinions and you know, stuff like what you're sharing on the podcast, how they, you know, get through class, what classes they like, all that kind of stuff. So that's one of our biggest goals for the year, which is cool that you mentioned that.
Yeah, it's cool. I know that's something I'm trying to roll out right now, is get a lot of people to guest write on our agency's blog.
Sweet. Yeah. And if we could help with that in any way, just we'll stay in touch. So. And then the last one for the lightning round is, what's one thing you know today that you wish you knew when you were 19?
Honestly, GPAs don't mean anything. And I have that's the nice way to say it. I have something much different written on my wall, my whiteboard back at home. But I think of GPAs as one of the worst utilizations of the numbers between 0 and 4 that I've ever seen in my life. I used to be in high school, man. I was like, I got to have a 3.98 or a 4.0. Like, I can't go any lower. And if I got an A- on a test or like a 91%, I would beat myself up for weeks. I am a much different person now. If I get a 91% on the test, there was obviously a curve because I'm shooting for 85s at this point, if that. But I just think, obviously, so many people told me that when I was 18 and 19, they're like, hey, GPAs don't matter, invest in experiences. And I was like, you're crazy, I'm not going to listen to you. So if you are listening to this, please listen to me, that GPAs are important, but they are not the end of the line for you. I know plenty of people that are millionaires and probably closing in on billionaires within the next 10 years that probably got like a 2.2 GPA and flunked out of college. It's not to say that you should go get a 2.2 GPA because you'll make a lot of money, but just figure out what to invest in, but just don't get so caught up in the GPA that you beat yourself up over it like I did.
Yeah, I think a lot of people need to hear that, especially Christian and I, just over and over again, because as much as like we want to believe it, we're still in that little bubble of where, you know,
yeah,
always the day-to-day concerns of like, oh shit, like this test, you know, has all these big implications, whatnot. But yeah, that's it for us. And I guess we'll ask you after we hit and on record of what's actually up on the whiteboard.
Definitely. Well, thanks for having me on, guys. I appreciate it.
Yeah, and I guess the last thing is, where can our audience find you and learn more about you and follow along with your journey? Because I'm sure they're interested to learn more about all that you're working on.
Yeah, so the main social media accounts that I use are LinkedIn, Twitter, and Instagram. LinkedIn, if you just search my name, David W. Riggs, you'll find me. And then on Instagram and Twitter, it's at dwilliamriggs.com or at dwilliamriggs. And then I also have my own personal website. If you go to any of those social media accounts, you'll find it, the link kind of in the bio or whatever. But yeah, those are kind of the main places to find me.
So yeah, we'll throw those in the show notes so it's easier for people to access. But appreciate your time, David. That was a lot of fun.
Yeah, man. Thank you.
Hey guys, show some love for the Real Talk University podcast by subscribing and leaving a review on the Apple Podcast app. See you all next week.